He went over to the inner door, and Marion buzzed him through.
Ugh.
The smell was the first thing that hit Tell as he entered Angelo's office. It stank of old food and spilled drink, of rot and corruption. And clearly, no one had opened a window in far too long. The room was dim and gloomy, with all the shutters closed. There was only one light on, over Angelo at his desk. He was sitting hunched forwards.
They shall be dealt with. The word of the church is a truth, and its enemies shall howl in despair.
Tell wasn't sure whether his brother even knew he was there. He walked slowly and carefully through the gloom, avoiding the darker shadows of pieces of furniture. The carpet seemed sticky under his feet. Tell could feel his heartbeat racing. All his instincts were yelling at him that he had come to a very dangerous place. His eyes adjusted to the gloom as he drew nearer Angelo's desk. The room was a mess. Nothing was in its right place. Nothing had been cleaned up. And what looked like important papers were scattered over the floor around the desk. Tell did his best not to step on them. He stopped in front of the desk, and Angelo finally raised his head to look at him. He glared sullenly at his brother, making no move to greet him. His hair was long and shaggy, and his beard hadn't been trimmed in ages. His face had an unhealthy pallor, and his eyes had the dark, dangerous glare of an old-time prophet. His hands were toying with a long, vicious-looking dagger, and Tell was suddenly very glad there was a wide desk between him and his brother. Tell looked away from his brother's disturbing gaze and suddenly realized that what he thought was an ornament was in fact the back of someone's head. Tell moved to one side for a better look. It was a severed human head with sunken eyes, its mouth drooping open, and a never-ending scream of horror. It was mounted on a letter spike, and the blood around the base still looked wet.
What happened, Angelo? You run out of executive toys?
Oh, don't mind him. He was a traitor. There are traitors everywhere.
Traitors and heretics.
But I make use of them. Waste not, want not, as our dear mother used to say. I was going to call her only the other day, but I talk to the head, you know, and it talks to me. God speaks to me through its dead lips, telling me his will. For I am his angel, and he loves me dearly. I'm not sure how he feels about you, Tell. You were always very cruel to me when we were younger. God's will is sometimes strange and often downright disturbing, but who are we to question him? Don't blame the messenger for the message, that's what I always say. If he wants people killed, he must have his reasons. The only problem is, I have to keep replacing the heads. They wear out very quickly, and it's often hard to work out exactly what God is saying when the mouth is rotting and falling apart. I know. The bad workman blames his tools, but the spirit is willing. But the flesh is weak. Still, there's never any shortage of heretics and traitors. Sometimes I find them among my own people when I'm in a hurry. God does not like to be kept waiting.
Tell nodded slowly, keeping his face blank. No wonder Finn wanted Angelo replaced. It might undermine the faith of the church militant fanatics if word got out that their reverend spiritual leader had gone barking mad. Tell sighed inwardly. Perhaps if he got Angelo out of here, away from all this and the pressures of the job, then perhaps he could be coaxed back into his right mind. Mother would take him in. She always did. Angelo had always been her favorite.
You can't stay here, Angelo. It isn't safe anymore. I need you to come with me now.
Tell reached out a hand to his brother across the desk, but Angelo recoiled immediately.
No! This is my place! I have made it a holy place and sacred! I can never leave here. The world is a dirty, sinful place full of liars and schemers. Nowhere else is safe now. They plot against me. They do. Even the Durandal. I never trusted him. But I know what's going on. I have my sources, and God tells me many things. I live on pure air, you know. I have transcended the need for grosser nourishment. Angels are above all mortal weaknesses. You must go. I have a sermon to finish. The people are waiting to hear from me. They rely on me.
I can't kill him. It might almost be a merciful release, but even so, I can't murder a helpless, pathetic mess like this. It would be like poisoning a small child. It seems there are some lines that even I won't cross. Who would have guessed it? Come with me, Angelo. Let me take you home.
I can't go home. I don't belong there anymore. Finn gave me so many drugs, and I took them, and now I have to stay in the place I made for myself. Did I ever tell you what happened in that church on Madrigal all those years ago? I lied. It wasn't like that at all.
I know.
I thought I found my path there and my destiny. But all I really found was the darkness in my own soul. Get out of here. Tell you can't help me. Even I can't help me now. I must do what I must do.
Angelo.
Get out, tell!
Before God tells me to hurt you.
Tell backed slowly out of the dimly lit room, not taking his eyes off his brother, and then he left, closing the door firmly. He looked at the secretary behind her desk, shook his head helplessly, and strode off back through the cathedral, and wondered where the hell he could go, where Finn Durandal wouldn't be able to find him. It didn't take long for the news to get back to Finn. Tell wouldn't have been surprised if Angelo's secretary Marion hadn't put in the call herself. Either way, Tell had barely found a private comm booth and started calling his so-called friends and allies when he discovered that the word was already out on him. And the word from Finn was death. There was to be no chance for explanations or excuses. Most of the people Tell called wouldn't take his call, and those few who would seemed to take an inordinate delight in informing him that he was no longer any associate of theirs. Tell Markham had been disowned from on high, and now he was an outcast, a pariah, with a price on his head. Some gloated, some even made threats, but most just wanted him to go away and never call them again, because failure might be catching. Tell left the comm booth and wandered off down the street. He hadn't spent long enough on any call for anyone to be able to trace him, but he felt a need to keep moving. He knew there was only one place he could safely go now, but he resisted the idea, his thoughts plunging wildly back and forth for some alternative. Because once he fell into the rookery, that was the end of his soft, comfortable, privileged life. He hated to think he'd thrown it all away, just because of a brother he'd never even liked much. And then Tell stopped and looked at the vid screens on display in a store window. They were all talking about him.
Tell Markham, the representative.
A breaking news story was running on all the major channels. The life and crimes of Tell Markham, traitor and fugitive from justice. Tell watched for a while and had to admire the workmanship. It was a very detailed, very clever hatchet job. Finn must have had it put together some time back and kept it in reserve for just such an occasion as this, when Finn no longer needed Tell. The news story listed all the bad things he'd done, and a great many he hadn't. Tell was impressed by the research and thought he detected the skilled poison pen of Mr. Sylvester himself, the miner of reputations that Finn had brought out of the rookery to be his character assassin. Tell had worked with Mr. Sylvester in the past on just such pieces as this, using half-truths and vicious lies to bring down those who threatened him. The irony of the situation did not escape Tell. The story went on to reveal every one of the secret organizations he'd belonged to, from the Shadow Court to the Hellfire Club, and even a few really obscure ones that Tell had actually forgotten about. And so, at a stroke, Finn separated Tell from all his old allies. None of the groups would support him now. They'd probably be furious enough to put a price on his head themselves. He had sworn allegiance to too many people, too many causes, and they would never forgive him for daring to serve so many conflicting masters. Even the few people he'd actually thought of as friends had disowned him. You don't have anything we want. You don't have anything we need. You're nobody. Tell looked casually around, and then activated the hollow face he kept hidden for emergencies, stored in his high collar. It would last long enough to get him to where he was going. When you had nothing and no one, there was still one place that would always take you in. The last resort of the desperate man.
The Rookery.
Tell Markham entered the Rookery through one of the lesser-known ways, and went straight to a safe house he'd maintained for many years under a pseudonym, the finances carefully concealed behind a series of cutouts. He'd always made a point of keeping up with the payments, even in his leanest times. All for a time he'd hoped would never come. He let himself in with a key he'd never used before, turned off his hollow face, and looked around him. It wasn't much, but it had all the amenities, including a comm line.
Well, might as well get started.
So the first thing Tell did was to sit down and contact all the major news channels, anonymously of course, and spill all the secrets and dirt he'd spent a political lifetime accumulating. All the scandals, all the stupid choices and dirty washing of everyone he'd ever worked with. If he was going down, he was taking everyone else with him. Tell was a great believer in the satisfactions of revenge and spreading the pain around. And yet, interestingly enough, none of the news channels would accept anything about Finn Durandal.
Damn it!
The comm line just shut itself down automatically every time Tell tried to use the name Finn. The Durandal had fixed it so no one could discuss anything that the Durandal didn't want discussed. Tell was impressed. That was real power. He tried every trick he knew to get around the problem, but in the end he had to give up.
The hell with it!
He shut down the comm link. It had been a long and unexpectedly hard day, and he was tired. Maybe he'd try again tomorrow. It wasn't as if he had anything else to do. He leaned back in the uncomfortable chair and wondered what he was going to do next. He had some money put away under a multitude of false identities, but it wouldn't last long. And the Rookery could be an expensive place once people there realized you had nowhere else to go. And sooner rather than later, the bounty hunters would be on his trail. Finn would see to that. Tell wrapped his arms tightly around himself as a cold wave of helplessness washed over him. He was alone, cut off from everyone and everything he knew. What was he going to do now? He looked at the mirror on the wall opposite him and didn't recognize the face he saw there.
Jesus.
The pale, frightened face in the mirror didn't look like him. That old, beaten-down man couldn't be Tell Markham, mover and shaker, member for Madraguda. Though he supposed even that title would be taken away from him, now he'd been named a traitor. But if he wasn't an MP, what was he? Tell was used to defining himself by what he did, his title and his power and his influence. Now all that was gone, was he still Tell Markham? Who was he, really? What did he believe in? He'd never believed in any of the causes he supported, not once. They were all just a means to an end, to making him a mover and a shaker. All he had left now was himself. And now that he looked, there didn't seem to be much of him. No, there was one thing he was sure of. He was a man who wouldn't murder his own brother. Tell smiled slowly, coldly.
When everything else has been taken, there's always revenge.
And Finn really should have remembered that a man with nothing left to lose is the most dangerous man of all. Finn Durandal decided that he would murder Angelo Bellini and make it look as though Tell Markham had done it anyway. So he strolled through the cathedral, nodded casually to Marion at her desk, and walked unannounced into Angelo's office. Finn hauled Angelo over his desk and strangled the Angel of Madraguda with his bare hands. Finn watched almost clinically as Angelo's face reddened and then darkened, and the way his eyes bulged as he struggled for breath, as he beat helplessly against Finn with his soft, useless hands. But in the end, it was all over very quickly, and Finn was somewhat surprised and disappointed to discover that he hadn't actually enjoyed it very much. It was just work, a necessary and marginally unpleasant detail he'd had to take care of, and now it was done. Finn let the dead body fall to the carpet, and then he strode around the desk and sat down in Angelo's chair to consider the matter. It was getting harder and harder for Finn to find things he could enjoy. When you can do anything and no one can stop you, it rather takes the thrill out of it. He needed greater and greater stimulus to activate and entertain him, to keep him going. He'd done all the usual things, broken all the usual taboos, and now his greatest enemy was boredom. He was beginning to understand what it was that drove the elves to commit acts of such appalling excess. When nothing is forbidden or impossible, even the vilest of sins can lose its savor. Finn had thrown aside all moral restraints in the name of freedom and found it exhilarating. But now he was discovering that when you care about nothing, then nothing much matters anymore. It would probably have been different if he'd been a man of great physical appetites for food and drink and sex, but he'd never had much use for any of them. And it might have helped if love had been real, but it never had been for him. He'd always been much more comfortable with hatred. It seemed all he had left now were the subtle joys of intrigue, the setting of his mind in opposition to others, that and the happy satisfactions of revenge. He would still bring the Empire down and exult in its destruction, but he was no longer as sure he could be bothered to raise it up again. Finn considered the rotting, severed head on its spike on Angelo's desk. Its ugliness bothered him. So he removed it from its spike and threw it aside. He got up, went over to Angelo's body, cut off the head, and brought it back to the desk. He settled Angelo's head on the letter spike, taking some care to get it perfectly straight and upright, and then sat back down again to study it. He particularly liked the look of surprise that still haunted the slack features. He decided to leave it there on the desk, as a gift for whoever he decided to put in charge of the church militant. It would make such a marvelous object lesson. Hopefully, whoever he finally settled on wouldn't take the job so seriously this time. Treasure Mackenzie, also known as Frankie, bribed and dazzled her way past the guards at King Douglas's door, breezed cheerfully through into his private chambers, and then locked the door behind her, using a key that would keep everybody out, even the guards. She had a lot to say and do, and she didn't intend to be interrupted. Douglas rose up out of his chair with a polite objection on his lips, and then stopped as he realized there was something different about his fiancée this time. Her face was as beautiful and sensual as ever, but her eyes were cold, and her generous mouth was set in a flat line. She strode towards him like a warrior going into battle, and Douglas dropped his book into his chair and met her with a cold, thoughtful look of his own. Treasure didn't look happy to see him. She came to a halt right in front of him, her eyes boring into his.
The time for masks is over, Campbell. It's time to reveal who we really are. And what we really want.
Really? How very intriguing. To what exactly do I owe the pleasure of this visit, Treasure?
That's not my name. Not my real name. I was born Francine Wolfe.
Wolfe?
That's right, Campbell. I'm the current head of a family that was once your clan's greatest enemy. Our ancestors killed each other for laughs. And now, here I am promised to you in marriage, if either of us lives that long. It turns out we have a common enemy, someone who wants us both dead. Unless we can agree to put aside our differences and our masks to work together.
This enemy, does he have a name?
The Durandal. Finn intends to replace you with James. You must have realized that by now.
Perhaps. And perhaps I'm not the broken reed that I allow others to see. But why should I ally myself with you, Wolf? I only have to be near you and the stink of hidden agenda becomes almost overpowering.
You need me because you've allowed yourself to become isolated. You have no friends or allies, and even the house has turned its back on you. For a paragon and a prince, you've been remarkably naive. You really should have chosen your friends more carefully. Finn has become your greatest enemy. Lewis is outlawed, and Anne is sleeping with James. Ah, you didn't know that. I wasn't sure.
Poor Anne. It's all going to end badly, and there's nothing I could do to help her.
She betrayed you. She sold her soul to Finn.
She must have been hurting for a long time, and I was always too busy to notice. But then it seems I failed to notice a lot of things. What do you want, Wolf?
Your only hope is to destroy Finn and James before they come for you. And for that, you're going to need me, and the people I represent. I'm Hellfire Club, Douglas. Now don't look at me like that. We're probably the only power left in the Empire that doesn't bow down to the Durandal.
If there's anything left in this declining Empire that's lower and more despicable than Finn Durandal, it's the Hellfire Club. Do you think I've forgotten all the atrocities your people have committed down the years? Have you forgotten how many of your people I've killed?
Strange times make for strange allies, Campbell. Don't let your childish dislike for our methods blind you to the opportunities here. You agree to work with me, with us, and we will make you king again. A real king this time. Working together, we can undermine and throw down the Durandal. Usurp his people and turn them to our cause. And then we will bring back the old days of clan and birthright and tradition.
Frankie was standing very close to Douglas now, her eyes gleaming.
The families will take their rightful place again, and we will sit on the great thrones of empire and rule over all. Our words shall have power over life and death, and all our enemies shall know blood and suffering forever.
I never wanted any of that. I never even wanted to be king. Perhaps if I'd stuck to my guns and forced my father to find another successor, none of this need ever have happened.
Well, if you won't do it for ambition, how about revenge? The Durandal has ruined your life and destroyed everything you ever believed in. Are you going to let him get away with that? Or are you smart enough to join with us and stop him before he brings everything down to rack and ruin?
Low as I am, I still have more sense than to make a deal with the devil. Once I let you in, I'd never be free of you. What's the point of replacing one tyrant with another? I'll find a way to stop Finn, and I'll find a way to stop you, too. Hope you enjoy the wedding, Wolf. It's all you'll ever have of me.
That bitch Flowers really did take your balls with her, didn't she?
Frankie let her right hand drift closer to the high slit in her dress over her right thigh. Under the dress, she had a concealed leather sheath holding a long, slender dagger. The leather had been cloned from her own skin, and the dagger fashioned from scrapings from her own thigh bone, which meant neither of them would show up in any security scan. And who would body search a woman going to meet her husband-to-be after the scan had already cleared her? If Douglas couldn't be persuaded to do the sensible thing, then that left only one option: kill Douglas and plant evidence to make it look like Finn did it. The Hellfire Club could then step in and take advantage of the resulting chaos, and before you knew it, little Treasure Mackenzie would be queen. Her court would be all Hellfire Club and all her advisors, and soon enough, the Empire would wake up to discover that everything had changed. The Dark Queen would hold dominion over all, devils would run riot in the streets, and do what thou wilt would be the whole of the law. It would be glorious. Frankie held Douglas's angry eyes with her own and drew the concealed dagger from its sheath. She leaned forward as though to kiss him, prepared to thrust the dagger into his unprotected groin. Except somehow, impossibly, his hand was there in time to grab her wrist and stop the blow well short of its target. Douglas twisted her wrist cruelly until she had no choice but to drop the knife. Frankie slashed at his eyes with her free hand, the long fingernails digging bloody furrows in his cheek as he snapped his head back. She broke free from his grip and fell back a step. They stood there a moment, glaring at each other, and then they both lunged forward. For they were Campbell and Wolf, Paragon and Hellfire Club, and they would never be anything but enemies. It was a killing fight now, and they both knew it. They slammed together, both of them fighting expertly and viciously, as they'd been trained. Their hands struck like weapons, going for soft spots and unguarded places. They used killing blows and crippling moves, parrying vicious attacks at the very last moment, hurting each other with almost clinical precision.
Open this door! Open this door right now!
Frankie had fixed the locks. Douglas and Frankie fought hand to hand with marvelous skill and deadly fury. She knew every dirty trick there was, but he was a trained paragon. And in the end, he was a professional, and she was just a gifted amateur. Douglas slipped under a carelessly timed blow, spun Frankie around, and caught her in a full Nelson. Both his hands clapped firmly over the back of her neck, pressing her head forward, while her arms stretched helplessly out. Frankie slammed her marvelous body back against Douglas, but she couldn't break the hold. She stamped down at his feet. Douglas applied more pressure, forcing her chin down against her breastbone.
That's it! This is over! Surrender and stand trial, or die right here!
You haven't got the balls! The Hellfire Club will see you dead for this insult! No one refuses us! We will be at your back and at your throat for as long as it takes to get you. Let me go. Bow down to me and you can still be someone.
And somehow, impossibly, her right shoulder dislocated itself and her right arm came snaking around, holding the bone dagger. Douglas's arm muscles flexed powerfully and her neck broke. Frankie went limp against him. The bone dagger fell from her dead hand. Douglas let her go, and she fell untidily to the floor, like a beautiful broken doll. Douglas knelt down beside her.
I am someone. I am the king. And I sentence you to death for treason.
Douglas, it's Anne. Open the door. Open it right now.
Douglas looked at his hands, and there was blood on them from the fight. And that was how Anne Barclay and the guards found him when they finally broke down the doors and burst into his chamber. King Douglas, sitting beside the dead body of his wife-to-be, with her blood on his hands.
Oh my God, Douglas. What have you done?
He's killed her. The bastards killed Treasure Mackenzie.
Anne moved slowly forward, and Douglas looked up at her.
I had to kill her. She was Hellfire Club.
Of course she was, Douglas. Now please, stand up. Let them get to the body. I'll get someone to take you somewhere else.
This isn't what it looks like, Anne. She tried to kill me.
Her? Empty-headed, harmless little Treasure Mackenzie? The woman who was going to be your wife, your queen? Oh, Douglas. There's no way we can cover this up, Douglas. There's nothing I can do for you. Oh, God, I never should have gone along with a second marriage, not so soon after you. By introducing her to you, I as good as killed her myself.
She was...
I don't want to hear it, Douglas. Oh, Jesus. I never should have left you alone for so long. I knew you were depressed, but I never meant to... Oh, hell. I'm sorry, Douglas. You've gone too far now. There is nothing I can do for you.
My God!
He's killed her.
Anne put a gentle hand on his arm.
Go with them, Douglas. I won't let them hurt you, I promise. They'll take you somewhere safe.
What the hell happened here?
The king has lost his mind. He must be placed under house arrest, under secure conditions for his own protection, until a trial can be arranged.
You have security cameras in here. I know you, Anne. You have cameras here somewhere to keep an eye on me. Make sure I wasn't plotting. Check the recordings. They'll show what really happened.
All the cameras were shut down. That's why I came in here as soon as I heard. How did you do that, Douglas?
She really was very thorough. Of course she wouldn't want any witnesses.
Take him away. Be firm, but don't hurt him. He's not responsible. And get that body out of here. No one is to say anything to anyone. Not until I figure out how we're going to play this. And someone go find the Durandal. He'll have to put things in action. For the trial. And the funeral. And I'll have to tell James.
Anne looked at Douglas, almost triumphantly.
He'll have to be king now.
Over my dead body.
Yes.
Out on the rim, on the edge of the Empire, the moment it appeared in normal space again, they picked up the Terror's Herald, the awful black ship that preceded the Terror's coming. No one saw it coming. It was just suddenly there, heading for its next target, Heracles IV. It didn't look like much, just a dark, vaguely organic shape about a mile in length, heading in a straight, implacable line towards the sun of its next victim. It was traveling at less than light speed, but even so, Heracles IV had only a few hours in which to prepare itself. Heracles IV was the only inhabited planet in the system, an artificially maintained farm world producing luxury foods and wines. Normally, it didn't even have much of a security force. It had never needed one. But on this day, Heracles IV was the most heavily defended planet in the Empire. The outermost defensive ring was composed of thousands of sensor drones. They picked up the Terror's Herald the moment it appeared in normal space again, but the Herald had already passed them all by the time the planet responded to their warning. The Oversoul might have bought them more time, but there were no Espers in the Empire anymore. Finn Durandal had seen to that. The next layer of defense was provided by an orbiting minefield of the most powerful subspace detonators the Empire had ever produced. They blew up, one after the other, as the Herald passed through them. It didn't slow or alter its progress one bit. Down on the planet's surface, hundreds of thousands of remote news cameras turned themselves on. Every news station in the Empire was represented on Heracles IV, ready to cover the story. There were no actual reporters there, of course. They couldn't get insurance. But their cameras were there, ready to broadcast the death of a planet and its whole population, live and as it happened. Or, just possibly, a world's miraculous escape from utter destruction. The news stations had editorials ready to run either way. Pretty much the whole Empire was watching breathlessly as Heracles IV's dearly purchased defense systems activated. State-of-the-art disruptor cannon fired on the Herald from orbiting stations as it approached, hitting the intruder again and again with almost unimaginable energies. Forces that had scorched all the life from whole planets struck the Herald full on and left it unscathed. Mind bombs powerful enough to madden whole cities detonated one after the other to no effect. Sensor arrays bathed the Herald with every investigative technique known to the Empire, and they couldn't even decide on whether the Herald was really there or not. The Herald just kept coming. And now there was only one layer of defensive tech left, the untried, mysterious alien tech supplied by Mog Moore. No one on the planet even knew what it was, or what it was supposed to do. In Orpheus City, capital of Heracles IV, all hell was breaking loose. The population was torn between mass prayer sessions, rioting in the streets, hiding in bomb shelters, and the occasional mass suicide pact. All those who could leave had already done so. The last few ships were still racing away from Heracles IV and praying they'd put enough distance between them and the planet to be able to drop into the safety of hyperspace before it was too late. But right in the heart of the city, three paragons strolled down the main street, passing a bottle of wormwood brandy back and forth between them, and looking curiously up at the sky. Sent by Finn Durandal to make a first-hand report on the Terror's approach, all three were possessed by the Uber-Esper screaming silence. Once their names had been Kelly Fox, Yvonne Church, and Avram Dusk, but now someone else watched the skies through their eyes and waited interestedly to see what would happen. Screaming silence had had a pleasant enough time waiting, dining and drinking of the finest the world had to offer, sleeping with each other till they were sore, because no one else would come near them, and otherwise indulging the Uber Esper's never-ending appetites by proxy. The Paragons themselves were becoming rather damaged, but that didn't matter. They would die here anyway, once the terror drew too close, and Screaming Silence had to leave. Finn had sent them on the grounds that since they were already mentally controlled, they might be immune to the terror's deadly voice, the never-ending scream that drove whole populations insane. He was really intrigued to see what would happen. The Herald plowed through the last of the standard defenses as though they weren't even there, and came at last to the Mogmoor line. Activated by its approach, the alien tech unfolded, great gleaming shapes that blossomed into vast crystal flowers. Strange energies seethed around them, and space itself rippled and wavered. Terrible forces seized upon the Herald and strove to force it out of normal space and back into whatever hell it came from. Sinkholes and singularities flared briefly, pockmarking space, only to collapse in on themselves and disappear, ignored by the Herald. One by one, the Mogmoor devices overloaded and disintegrated, and the Herald flew on, untouched. From a place that was not a place, it came. A nightmare given shape and form, heading inexorably for the son of Heracles IV. Screaming Silence reached out curiously with her mind, forcing her psionic abilities through the limited minds of her thralls. Blood leaked from their nostrils and eyes, but she didn't care. Her thoughts rose up from the planet to touch the coming Herald, and then immediately withdrew, shocked and sickened. She couldn't bear to be near it, even for a moment. She slammed back into the three Paragons' minds, and then abandoned them, fleeing back to Logris and safety. The plan had been for Screaming Silence to stay until the very last moment, until the Herald's vicious spawn came howling out of the sun, and perhaps even until the appearance of the Terror itself. But one glimpse of the Herald's terrible true nature was enough to panic and terrorize the Uber Esper. She turned and ran, abandoning her thralls to their fates. They clung to each other, shaking and shuddering, soiled beyond hope at what the abomination had done in their minds and through their bodies. But at long last, they were themselves again. And because they were Paragons, their spirits were not broken. Kelly Fox was short, slender, gammon, pale of face, with almost colorless blonde hair. There was blood and vomit down the front of her tattered tunic. Yvonne Church was a giant Valkyrie of a woman, with a wide fan of jet-black hair, olive skin, and sharp patrician features. Her blouse was ripped open to the waist, and she pulled it shut with trembling hands. Avram Dusk had skin so dark it was almost blue, wrapped in what had once been pure white robes. White hair fuzzed his skull in places, where the Uber Esper hadn't bothered to shave it regularly. One of the fingers on his left hand was missing. The Uber Esper had bitten it off and eaten it, just to savor the experience. Weakened, sickened, almost maddened by the experience of their long possession, they held each other for a while, drawing what comfort they could from simple human closeness, and then they stood apart and looked around them at a city in chaos. People were running and screaming in the streets, while all kinds of traffic roared uselessly in every direction. Looting had begun, and fires were breaking out. People had started jumping from high buildings. The sky was purple now, with blood-red clouds covering the sun, as though to hide the vulnerable sun from the awful thing that was coming.
It'll be here soon. We have to do something.
We have to get off-world. We must let the Empire know that elves are possessing the Paragons.
No. First, we have to save Heracles IV.
Avram looked at her.
I'm open to suggestions.
Tears rolled down Kelly's cheeks.
There's nothing we can do. She left us nothing.
We know. We all remember what she made us do. We have to be strong now, Kelly. These people need us. That's what being a Paragon is all about. Being strong when others can't.
You always were a pompous bastard, Avram. All right. Paragons first and foremost. But what the hell can we do?
We launch our ship from the starport. No one will have got past the defenses on our ship. We go up, we drive straight at the Herald, wait until we're right on top of it, and then overload the star drive. I don't care what the Herald is. An exploding star drive could blow out a sun like a candle.
Theoretically. No one's actually tried it, as far as I know.
No one's ever had to before.
They looked at each other for a while, and then Yvonne shrugged.
What the hell? It's a good day to die. What is death but a release from our memories? For us, death will be a comfort.
You always were a spooky cow.
They strode off through the city, ignoring the panicked souls running blindly around them. It wasn't that far to the main starport, after they commandeered a car.
No! No, I need to get out of here! You can't take it! I'll kill you first! Bastards! I'll kill you!
They had to kill the driver to get it, but they couldn't let themselves think about that. Every time they saw a floating news camera, they slowed the car and called out to the camera.
Listen to us! The Espers control the Paragons!
Trying to get word out of what had been done to them and the other Paragons. But every time they tried, the cameras shut themselves down. They'd been programmed to do that. Finn thought of everything. The Paragons roared across the empty landing pads and pulled up next to their ship, the Harrow. It didn't take them long to power up the ship. Soon they were punching through the planet's atmosphere, heading for space and the Herald. They sat close together on the bridge, still drawing what comfort they could from each other. Sometimes they held hands. It helped. They were all tired, deathly tired, in body and in spirit. But duty and honor drove them on. That, and one last chance to strike a blow at humanity's greatest enemy. The Herald soon showed up on their screens, easily a mile long. The details of its shape seethed endlessly, as though it crawled with maggots, or as though it was unable to settle on just one distinct form. It was utterly alien in shape and nature, like some monstrous idea downloaded into reality to drive everything mad.
Dear God.
That's enough.
Yvonne turned the view screen off. They didn't need to see it. The Harrow drew near enough to the Herald that the three Paragons could actually feel its presence in their minds and in their souls.
It has been an honor and a privilege.
Just do it.
Kelly opened the dampers on the star drive and let it run wild. When it was all over, the Herald flew on, untouched and untroubled, with its course unaltered, heading straight for the sun to give birth. The whole empire watched through the remote news cameras as the Herald plunged into the sun, the fiery heart incubating and then birthing the horde that would destroy the planet. They came out of the sun howling, and descended on Heracles IV. Round and round the world they went, in a never-ending screaming that brought madness and horror to all who heard it. Death and destruction raged across the world, and no one was spared. And when hell was finally fully in session, and the damned danced crazily in the flames of what had once been their cities, the terror came. It unfolded into the reality like a poisonous flower, faster than the sun and more deadly, to feast on the horror it had created. And when there was nothing left on Heracles IV, the terror returned to the place that wasn't a place, and the Herald moved on towards its next target, leaving Heracles IV burning like a coal in the night. And all across the Empire, on planet after planet, there was panic and rioting and the killing of scapegoats, and mass migrations on every ship that could carry people away from the Rim and towards the center of the Empire. At the very center, at the heart of the homeworld, the Parade of the Endless on Logris, Finn Durandal was quietly furious. He'd lost Heracles IV, the Paragons had delivered nothing useful before they died, thanks to the cowardly Uber-Esper, and with Tel Markham gone and nowhere to be found, Finn had no one to take out his rage on. Maybe he should get a dog, or a cat. He felt like kicking something. He and Anne Barclay already had a speech prepared. They gave it to James, who delivered it at the House of Parliament with all his usual style and bravado. It was a good speech, carefully crafted to take the people's minds off the enormity of what had just happened by giving them a scapegoat to take out their fears on. Finn, together with Anne and through James, put the blame squarely on Clan Deathstalker on the planet Viramond. Finn claimed that the clan could have helped defend the Empire against this terrible threat, but had chosen not to. That they possessed secret family information on what had really happened to the long-lost Owen Deathstalker and where he might be found, but that they had deliberately chosen to withhold this vital intelligence until they got what they wanted, Lewis officially pardoned and made king in Douglas's place. A true king, an emperor, in fact. Finn had, of course, righteously refused to give in to this blackmail, but now the clan must be forced to give up what it knew, before the terror could strike again. In his speech, James attacked the whole clan, but most especially its current heads, Roland and Laura Deathstalker, parents of the outlawed Lewis. The Imperial fleet already had star cruisers in orbit around Viramond. They merely awaited Parliament's command, and then they would land attack troops in force and take control of Deathstalker standing by force if necessary. Roland and Laura Deathstalker would be arrested, and as many of their family as necessary, and required to give up all the secret knowledge they possessed on pain of their lives. Parliament roared its approval, and the order was given. Fear is a great motivator. It might have been different if King Douglas had been there, to be a voice of reason, but he was mad and a murderer, and imprisoned awaiting trial. Clan Deathstalker put out a response immediately, denying any secret knowledge of Owen's fate, but nobody listened. And by that time, the troops were already landing. They went down in armored pinnaces, just in case, their numbers smothering the landing pads of Viramond's main starport. From there, it was only a short forced march to Deathstalker standing. The castle stood on top of a tall, rugged cliff with a pounding ocean at its back and a broad plain before the main entrance. The attack troops drew up in great numbers facing the closed and sealed main gates, filling the plain with their eager, brutal faces and rank energy weapons. There were Church Militant crosses on their battle armor, and every one of them was pure humanity to the hilt. Finn had chosen these soldiers well, hardcore fanatics who would not be dissuaded by even the most reasonable of arguments. They were led by the Paragon Lola Martinez, possessed by the uber-esper screaming silence, eager for a chance to prove herself after her panicked flight from Heracles IV. Lola was tall and willowy, with flaming red hair falling in waves to her waist, held out of her face by a filigreed silver headband. Her body armor was scored with ancient runic symbols that hadn't protected her after all. She wore her proud purple cloak and a broad floppy leather hat tilted over one eye. She smiled and laughed a lot for no obvious reason, and there was something about the light in her bright green eyes that made even the hardened attack troopers give her plenty of room. They still jumped to obey her every order, though. She was Finn's voice on Viramond. Unfortunately, the Deathstalker standing had been designed to hold off armies. It was huge and blocky, with outer walls of solid stone over 10 feet thick. Set on a rocky promontory, it could only be attacked head-on from the front, and the many slit windows for defensive fire would make the open plain a killing ground for any attacking force. The castle might be old, but it had state-of-the-art protections, including energy weapons and force shields, and every member of Clan Deathstalker had been trained in the warrior's way since they were children, in honor and memory of their greatest warrior, the Blessed Owen. Finn didn't care. He gave the order through Lola Martinez, and the attack troops surged forward across the plain. Withering fire from the castle cut them down. They were an army of zealots, and they just kept coming, vaulting over the bodies of the fallen, every rank getting a little closer to the outer walls and the main gates. But the walls absorbed endless punishment, and the gates would not yield. Lola Martinez was forced to recall her forces, or watch them all die under the organized disruptor fire blazing from the recessed window slits. The army retreated, leaving its dead behind, and the guns fell silent. The siege of the Death Stalker Standing had begun. No one came to help the beleaguered clan. Although the Deathstalker family had many friends and allies on Viramond, none of them dared come forward. High above the world, the great engines of the Transmutation Board hung waiting in orbit, ready to unleash their unstoppable energies at a moment's notice and wipe the slate clean of all living things. And while Viramond was not as helpless as it might have seemed, having many old and secret and very powerful planetary defenses, for they had never forgotten the terrible invasion of Lionstone's time, still none of their defenses could stand off the transmutation engines. The Planetary Council saw no point in revealing those defenses uselessly, just to save one family. The clan was doomed, already dead in every way that mattered. The Council bided its time and looked to the future and revenge. Emma Steele and Nina Malapert watched it all happen on one of Nina's walls.
This is the scene on the planet Viramond.
Ugh.
Emma launched herself up out of her chair and stalked back and forth across the room.
This whole bloody government is corrupt. The only way to accomplish anything is to kill everyone and start all over, starting with the Durandal.
Nina nodded, but mostly she was thinking about how she'd give her eye teeth to be on Viramond right then, covering a real breaking news story. It didn't help that she and Emma still hadn't worked out what to do with the evidence they already had on Finn's involvement with the elves and the Uber-Espers. A blue steel robot from Shub suddenly materialized in the room with them. Emma's gun was quickly in her hand, and Nina was just as quickly standing behind Emma and peering over her shoulder. The robot looked at them with its blank face and made no threatening moves.
I come in peace.
That's what they all say. Haven't you ever heard of knocking?
Time is of the essence. Shub does not approve of the situation on Viramond, but unfortunately we cannot be seen to interfere directly. So we propose to offer you the chance to go to Viramond and do investigative and destructive things on our behalf. Are we right in assuming this would appeal to you?
Could be.
Emma didn't lower her gun.
Hold everything. I mean, all right, it's a great story and everything, darlings. But what could we actually do there? They're not going to listen to us, are they?
We can boost your camera's signal. We can guarantee that whatever you broadcast will get out live and uncensored.
Ooh, my kind of robot. Hold everything, part two. How are we going to get there in time to do anything?
We will teleport you right to the Deathstalker Standing.
And back?
Should you survive the situation on Viramond. But we have faith in Emma Steele to protect you from most dangers.
Why choose us?
It is hard to find anyone worthy of trust these days. You will do this for us, in return for future favors. The nature of the favors to be decided by you at a future date, should you survive.
Oh, please, Emma! We absolutely have to go! We can't do anything about the terror, but just maybe we can do something to screw up the Durandal's plans on Viramond.
We're going. Nina, grab your camera. And a whole lot of really big guns.
Super!
Unfortunately, Shub had chosen to materialize them outside the Deathstalker Standing, right in front of the closed and sealed main gates. Emma looked at the gates, and then turned and looked at the huge army of Church Militant attack troops. She already had her sword and gun in her hands, and now she activated the force shield on her arm. She felt she was being remarkably calm, all things considered. Nina, on the other hand, ducked behind Emma, and grabbed for the biggest gun out of the several she'd brought along in her backpack.
Is your camera working?
What? What? Oh, yes. We are going out live, and I personally would like to stay that way. I don't see a bell anywhere on these gates. Do you see a bell anywhere on these gates?
Oh, I think they know we're here. The security sensors will have picked us up by now. The question is, will they open their gates for two uninvited strangers and risk letting in the bad guys?
Tell them who you are! Everyone's heard of Emma Steele! Oh, shit. The army's looking at us. Emma? Why are the soldiers looking at us like that?
Probably because we appeared out of nowhere.
The troopers surged forward, their faces ugly with hate and revulsion. An energy blast ricocheted off Emma's raised force shield. Nina's face was pink with rage, and she stepped out from behind Emma, holding a gun so big she needed both hands to aim it. Emma braced herself while Nina hammered on the closed gates with the butt of her gun.
It's Emma Steele! Press! Let us in!
The first soldiers arrived, and Emma stepped forward to meet them. She shot the nearest one in the face, and then swung her sword in short, savage arcs. Blood flew in the air, and soldiers fell to either side of Emma, screaming and thrashing on the ground. She fought on, all cold precision, using the razor-sharp edges of her force shield as a second weapon. The dead and the dying piled up before her, and the troopers didn't seem nearly as eager to close with her as they had been. Nina fired another wild blast from her gun, and a whole section of the advancing troops suddenly disappeared, leaving only blood and scattered body parts behind. But the main part of the army was still pressing forward. The main gates to the castle swung suddenly open.
Oh, thank you! Emma!
Come on!
The Paragon backed away from the army, step by step, not daring to turn her back on any of the soldiers still threatening her. And then, a fusillade of disruptor fire opened up from behind her, blowing away the nearest troops like chaff on the wind. Emma turned and walked unhurriedly into the castle. She nodded her thanks to the dozen Deathstalkers standing in the doorway, and they bowed respectfully in return. The great gates slammed shut, and the Deathstalker standing was secure again. Nina was leaning against an interior wall, alternating between hyperventilating and trying to cover everything with her camera. Emma gave her a comforting pat on the shoulder and looked around for someone to talk to.
But it isn't over. Christopher, you're to command the watch relief this shift. Amy?
A squat, muscular man in full body armor was giving quiet orders to the others, so she settled for him. He turned as she approached and gave her an amused smile. He had a friendly face and a great leonine mane of silver hair.
Welcome to Castle Deathstalker. Any enemy of the Girondel is a friend of ours. Your reputation precedes you, Paragon Steel, and I'm pleased to see that it isn't at all exaggerated. May I ask how the hell you got here?
We have friends. We're here to cover what's happening. My friend over there, trying hard not to throw up on your flagstones, is actually a very experienced reporter. Her camera's broadcasting everything live, so watch your language. We've been assured that the camera's signal can't be jammed or censored, in the hope that the Durandal won't dare do anything too obviously nasty while everyone's watching.
I wouldn't put money on it, Paragon. I am Roland Deathstalker, current head of the clan.
An honor to meet you, sir. Nina, put your head between your knees and breathe deeply, dear. That is Nina Malapert. I think we need to talk, Sir Deathstalker.
I think so, too. This way, if you please.
Emma went and collected Nina, whose eyes were finally focusing properly. She was still clutching her big gun.
I'll be fine. Fine. Did you see that army? There's a whole army coming right at us.
Come with us for a nice little sit-down. You'll feel a lot better after a nice little sit-down and a medicinal brandy.
Get me a bottle. Hell, get me two.
Roland Deathstalker led Emma and Nina to the great hall of the castle, a setting so huge and baroque and stuffed with items of historical interest that Nina brightened up immediately and began an excited, muttered running commentary to her camera.
This is Nina Malapert, and I am in the family Deathstalker standing, having narrowly escaped...
Emma left her to it and went with Roland to meet his wife, Laura. She stood proudly before the great open fireplace, a tall, elegant blonde in full battle armor. She smiled kindly at Emma.
Beowulf, Nimue, go to your beds.
The two big black dogs dozing at her feet got up good-naturedly, sniffed at Emma a few times, and then sloped off to make way for her. Nina hurried over, not wanting to be left out of anything. She trained her camera on Laura, and then suddenly got all bashful and tongue-tied. Standing side by side, Roland and Laura Deathstalker had a powerful, commanding presence. Laura looked to Emma.
I understand you worked with our son, Louis. Could I ask you for your impression of him?
A good man and true. Best Paragon I ever partnered. And I don't care what anyone says, he was never a traitor.
We never thought he was. But the press have said some terrible things.
Roland looked at Nina, who blushed furiously.
That's Finn's work. The champion. He controls the media these days. They say what he tells them to say, or they don't get to say anything. But there are still a few of us trying to get the truth out.
I never did trust Finn. Lewis often brought him here for short holidays, and of course we made Finn welcome, because he was Lewis's friend. But I never liked him. I always thought he was too good to be true.
No, Mother, that can wait. Paragon Steel, how much support can we expect from other quarters?
These days the Empire goes according to the Durandal's wishes. He is Emperor now in everything but name. James is just a front. The King is a broken man, and the House is Finn's lapdog. You're on your own, Sir Deathstalker. How bad is the situation here? How long can you hold out?
Every member of Clan Deathstalker is here, in the standing. We thought they'd be safer here. We never thought...
We're safe in here, Mother. Let that bastard Finn send his armies. They don't have anything out there that can break this castle. It has only ever fallen once, in David's time. And that was because of a traitor within, who opened the gates to the enemy. That won't happen this time. We can hold off pretty much any attack for months. We've got guns and food and drink for all. But somehow, I don't see Finn being ready to wait that long. No, he'll have some other way in mind to get at us, when the obvious ones failed. Excuse me.
He paused then, as a message came in through his comm implant over a private channel. He scowled, and then turned and activated a view screen on the wall above the great fireplace. Lola Martinez's face filled the screen. Her green eyes were very bright, and her smile was unnaturally wide.
It doesn't matter that we can't get in, because you're going to come out. I want every man, woman, and child in Clan Deathstalker to throw down their weapons, come outside, and surrender to me. Because if you don't, Finn Durandal will give the order to activate the transmutation engines currently orbiting your planet. And every living thing on this world will melt down into undifferentiated protoplasm. It really is that simple. You surrender, or your world dies. Either way, we get what we want. You have 1 hour. And then we withdraw, and the engines start their work.
Roland and Laura looked at each other. Nina moved in close beside Emma.
He wouldn't really do it, would he? I mean, this is Viramond. Owen's home world. Even Finn wouldn't dare touch it, would he?
You saw his broadcast, blaming the Deathstalkers for the loss of Heracles IV. The mood he's got people worked into, I think they'd let him get away with anything. A lot of them would even cheer as Viramond was broken apart for transmutation.
I told you'd have another plan. The Paragon is right. We have no choice. We have to surrender.
If you go out there, he'll kill you.
Yes, he probably will. Because we're a symbol and have to be brought down. Because Finn can use our deaths to hurt Lewis. Or just because he's a spiteful, vindictive little shit. But what matters is that the clan will go on. Lewis will return to lead the family, eventually, and he will avenge us.
Laura smiled fondly at her husband.
We have had a good life together, my dear. Let's not spoil the end of it by groveling before Finn's people.
I wouldn't dream of it. Wouldn't give the little turd the satisfaction.
The clan goes on.
Yes.
You really think you can trust the Durandal to keep his word?
We can trust him to kill everyone on Viramond to get his own way.
Then we came all this way for nothing.
What are you talking about? We're covering a great story, live and uncensored, as it happens. Finn won't dare break his word in front of an audience this big.
You're so young.